All right, welcome everybody. Thanks for coming to my talk. Title has already been mentioned. It's Asymptotic Performance Analysis for 1D Structured Least Squares, and it's joined with me and Professor Martin Hart from Ilmenau University of Technology. Now, for a brief motivation, I probably don't have to tell you that high resolution is interesting for a number of applications. In particular, as pre-type parameter estimation schemes are often used, because they're very simple, they're very flexible, they can be adapted to various settings, they're closed form, you don't need any peak search or something, and they often perform still close to the Kramerov bound. And they're all based, all these pre-type algorithms are based on the shift invariance equations, which are a set of overdetermined equations which are typically solved using just least squares, because it's simple. However, least squares is actually suboptimal. It is suboptimal because it ignores the fact that there are also estimation errors in the subspace itself. There is a better technique which is called structured least squares, which takes these estimation errors into account and also explicitly exploits the structure of the shift invariance equations, which has been proposed in 97. So it comes with improved performance. However, the problem is that so far the structured least squares basis pre was only evaluated using numerical simulations. So there is no analytical statement for when does it perform better, how much. So an analytical performance evaluation is of course pretty desirable. The goal here of this paper was to apply the same framework we used earlier to analyze least squares basis pre, which is this paper by Vaccaro, who gives the first order expansion of the signal subspace. In order to analyze structured least squares basis pre, we've used the same framework before to analyze least squares basis pre. The corresponding references are listed down here. So we've analyzed various versions like standard SPRI, unitary SPRI, tensor SPRI, and more. You can even do it for non-circular SPRI and others. But all of those are based on least squares. The purpose here was to extend the analysis to incorporate structured least squares. Which brings me to the outline after the brief motivation we had. Now I'll go through a brief review showing you again the shift invariance equations and what a structured least squares mean, showing you the concept of the first order perturbation for the SVD, which you might find interesting to use also in other fields, and then our earlier performance results for least squares and SPRI, and then the main part will focus on the structured least squares. I'll show you the solution and then the analysis and then some simulation results. So let's start with a review. What is shift invariance? SPRI is based on the fact that you can divide the array into two identical subarrays, J1 and J2, which observe the same observations except for a phase shift, which is encoded in this mu, which we call spatial frequency. And the spatial frequency is linked to your parameters of interest. For instance, if you want to do direction of arrival, it's linked to the direction of arrival angle theta with a simple relation. Now, these matrices, you can use selection matrices J1 and J2, which operate on your array steering vector A to select the sensors of the first and the second subarray. And then shift invariance tells you you get the same observation except for a phase shift, which contains the parameter of interest. This is for a single source. For multiple sources, these J1 and J2, they operate on the array steering matrix A, which contains all the array steering vectors. And your parameters of interest are actually phi. Right? These contain the spatial frequencies. Now, this is the shift invariance equation. It's a matrix equation. The problem is the array steering matrix is, of course, unknown. So to get rid of the unknown array steering matrix, what we do is we take our observations. Let's say X is a matrix which contains n subsequent observations of our m sensors, and then we just compute its SVD. And from the SVD, we get an estimate for the signal subspace, which are the d-dominant left singular vectors. And then use the fact that the array steering matrix and this matrix US span the same column space approximately because there is noise, so they are related via a transfer matrix T, and this can be used to eliminate it, right? So now we actually have the shift invariance equations which need to be solved for psi. That's the only unknown. US we have an estimate for, and psi, the eigenvalues of psi are the ones we're actually interested in, right? This is the basis for SPRI, just a very quick review. The main point here is that these are the shift invariance equations we need to solve. They're overdetermined, and we have an estimate for the subspace, but it's not accurate, right? So how do we solve it? Typically, people solve it just using least squares. And least squares just means you minimize the least squares fit between the left and the right-hand side of the equation, right? Only subject to psi. This gives a very closed form solution, a very simple one. You can use the pseudo-inverse. But the problem is you ignore the fact that you don't know exactly US hat. You assume actually implicitly that it's perfectly known, which is not true. We know that there is an error. And that's the idea of structured least squares. Structured least squares changes this cost function. What is the change here? The change is to incorporate for each of these occurrences of the subspace US an additional delta US, which explicitly models the fact that we have an estimation error in the subspace that we try to correct so that the two sides of the equation align in a better way. And we add a regularization term just to make sure that this update we're doing is small to penalize two large updates. This is the cost function for structured least squares. The nice thing is it takes into account the errors in the subspace. The drawback, though, is that it's now not a linear least squares anymore, but it's quadratic. So we typically solve it iteratively via local linearization. But it has been shown that only very few iterations are required. Actually, in the higher SNR regime, only one iteration is required. So you can see it just as a correction term. All right. Now, to come to a performance analysis for this, we need to look into this source of error that's actually here. And the source of error which is here is this delta US, this error in the signal subspace. We need to analytically grasp it. And the framework we're using for this is the one by Vaccaro, which I just briefly want to review. It's also very simple. You take a look at your unperturbed observations, X0, without any noise, where you have your true signal subspace and the true noise subspace, if you break again the SVD. In the presence of noise, you only have an estimate, so you can say that your estimated signal subspace is the true one plus an error term delta. And this we're trying to find. And for this error term, you can always expand it into one part which lies in the null space and one part which lies in the signal subspace. This is just because it lives in this m-dimensional space, so you can always break it into the two spaces. And the interpretation of the first component, it's the error of the signal subspace which is in the noise subspace. So it really models how much of the noise leaks into the signal subspace. How is the subspace itself run? Whereas the second one is the error of the signal subspace inside the signal subspace. This one models how the individual singular vectors inside the signal subspace, the particular basis we choose, how is it perturbed, right? So obviously, the second one plays no role for Esprit because the particular basis we pick is irrelevant, only the first one is relevant. But for both expansions exist, we've only used the first term because the second one's irrelevant. If you want, you can easily incorporate the second one as well. This has been proposed by Vaccaro in 93. You can see it's a very similar expression. It's a first order expansion in the noise N, which is our perturbation, and the second one has been proposed by Charlie Ma and her colleagues. But as I said, we don't need it for this work. Also, Vaccaro already in 93 has used this result to analyze standard Esprit, and he's given a first order expansion for the estimation error in the k-spatial frequency using standard Esprit, which is this simple expression. Based on this work, we've expanded it. We've shown at last year at ICASP in Dallas that you can, for instance, perform statistical expectation of this assuming white complex Gaussian noise. So what I should probably emphasize is that this framework is asymptotic in the effective SNR, so you don't need a large number of snapshots or something. You can have a single snapshot if you want, as long as the variance is low, and it needs no particular assumptions about the statistics. You don't need Gaussian of the noise. You don't even need Gaussian of the symbols. You just need the perturbation to be small. But if you assume Gaussian, then you can, of course, perform statistical expectation, and you get mean square error. This is least square standard Esprit, this is least square unitary Esprit, and you can do more. These are previous results we've shown, and based on these, now we try to expand them to incorporate structured least squares. So, what we've done here is we've restricted our extension to a special case of structured least squares, which is using a single iteration, and which is not using any regularization. The reason for this is that these assumptions are asymptotically optimal for structured least squares in the high SNR regime. And since the performance analysis we do is anyways asymptotic high SNR, it's fine to assume this, right? Because it's quadratic, but it's asymptotically linear, actually, right? Under these assumptions, you can express the cost function and the solution in a very simple way. You can say that the solution psi for structured least squares is equal to the initial solution given by least squares plus an update term. And this update term is the solution of this cost function, which is, of course, quadratic, as I've said. There is a term which does not depend on our updates, then there is a linear term, and then there is a quadratic term, right? The quadratic term we neglect, that's the linearization, so we are back to a linear least squares problem. And this linear least squares problem has, of course, a very simple solution for these structured least squares. So this will be the update for our matrix psi, and this would be the update for the subspace if you would want to do a second iteration. We actually don't need the second part since we're only doing one. So the main message here is that it's actually the update can be explicitly computed as taking this vector RLS, which is the vectorized version of the residual matrix after doing least squares, pre-multiplied by the pseudonyms of this matrix F here, which is the linear mapping matrix. And for this, we had to find a first-order expansion. How have we done it? We've done it by looking at both terms individually. We start with the first one, the pseudo-inverse of that matrix F here. What we've realized is that you can express this matrix F hat as equal to a matrix F plus a matrix delta F, where the matrix F is constant in the sense that it does not depend on the perturbation itself, right? So if you look at one realization and look at the random ensemble of perturbations, this one would be constant and this one would be linear, right? And this gives the matrix F hat. And therefore, if we look at its pseudo-inverse, since this part is zero mean, it's not very hard to see that the pseudo-inverse is actually equal to the pseudo-inverse of this constant matrix, independent of the perturbations, plus a linear term, plus a quadratic term, plus high-order terms, right? We don't actually explicitly need to expand it. It's fine to know that this constant term, as we will see, the linear term is actually not needed. And this has simplified the analysis greatly. For the second term, for this RLS, it's not difficult to see that this can be written as the linear expansion for this is, again, the error in the subspace delta US pre-multiplied by one matrix mapping the subspace U to the residual R plus a quadratic term, which we ignore. And also this sigma subspace, this is the result by Vaccaro, has a linear expansion in terms of the actual perturbation, the noise, again with a linear mapping matrix plus a quadratic matrix plus higher terms, right? Now if we collect both, if we collect this and this together, we see that the vector RLS has a linear expansion in the noise. And now if we combine these two results back into the original expression, we can see that if we multiply this sum and this one out, then we get a linear term, which is this constant term times the linear term, plus a quadratic term, which is this linear times the linear term, right? So the quadratic term, again, we will neglect it since it's first order. So this shows that we don't actually need even the linear expansion of the pseudo-inverse, right? And then we get this very simple result, which is pretty intuitive. You start with the noise, you have one mapping matrix from the noise to the subspace, then from the subspace to the residuals, and then this matrix here. This is still the vector M psi and US, but as I said, we're only interested in this upper part. So the final result for this upper part is actually this one. Again, it's pretty intuitive, linear mappings. And then you can also insert it back into the original expansion of the estimation error. You find the first order expansion of the estimation error of the spatial frequencies. Again, it's very simple, and it has a form which is, again, in its structure, very simple to the least squares expansion we've shown previously. There we had this this vector RLS, now it's RSLS, slightly different, but the form is still the same. And again, you can, if you want, perform mean square the mean square error. If you assume zero mean and circularly symmetric white noise, you actually don't even need Gaussian for this, and you get the mean square error, again, very compact and simple expression. Now, what is all this good for? Why do we go through this analytical result, and what does it show us now that we have the result? The very thing this is good for is if you look at a specific case where you can simplify the expression so much that you actually gain insight into what is the performance of the schemes under very specific settings. And to emphasize this point, I brought one example here, which is not in the paper due to lack of space, but I think it's interesting to kind of push forward a bit that this really has applications. And the example is, of course, the simplest one you can think of, which is a single source. If you consider a single source, then we've shown earlier that for least square space discrete, the mean square error has a very compact expression. If you consider a uniform linear array with m sensors, it has the effective SNR in front, and then it's quadratic in 1 over m, basically. Then the Kramarawa bound also has a very simple expression, which means that you can find the asymptotic efficiency, again, asymptotic in the effective SNR. It's valid for a single snapshot. Is given by this expression. So you have a closed form expression for the asymptotic efficiency only depending on M, and it's exact except for the fact that it's asymptotic, right? So what you can see here is that it starts with 1 for 2 and 3 sensors and then it goes down. So least squares basis pre is not efficient for large arrays on a single source. We did the same now for structured least squares, and after a number of manipulations we found again a closed form expression for the mean square error. It's a bit more involved, but you can do the same thing. You can now divide Kramarawa bound by mean square error, and you find a closed form expression for the asymptotic efficiency, which is a ratio of fifth order polynomials. Interestingly, the first three coefficients agree, then they start to differ. If you plot this on the same linear scale between 0 and 1, it looks like it's almost equal to 1, but it's actually not. If you zoom in a little bit, you can see it starts with 1, then it goes down a little bit, and then it goes back up. We don't really have a physical explanation for it, but mathematically you can prove that it's exact. With simulations, you can verify that it's like that. And you have the values for the asymptotic efficiency as exact numbers. So this is a pretty valuable result, and it would be interesting to extend this to two sources to see what's the performance in terms of separation, correlation, and these real-world parameters that we have. All right, just a few more simulations. In the simulations, what we compare is we compare the empirical error, which you get by actually performing ESPRI on random data and then estimating the spatial frequencies, computing the error and averaging it, with the semi-analytical results, which still depend on the noise realization, so we average these over noise, and the fully analytical results, for which no simulations are actually needed, no Monte Carlo averaging is needed because they're analytic, right? This first example here is four uncorrelated sources. Here, the performance of unitary ESPRI with least squares and structured least squares is very close. So it's, of course, interesting to see, can this really small gap still be reliably predicted? Well, the answer is yes. With our analytical results, we become asymptotically optimal, and we have the same small gap. This is the semi-analytical, this is the fully analytical. Another result, this is three sources which are very strongly correlated. There are 0.99 coefficients between any pair of sources. Now we have four versions. We have standard ESPRI based on least squares, structured least squares, unitary ESPRI based on least squares, structured least squares. Due to the strong correlation, now there's a bigger gap, so you can more clearly distinguish the curves. Again, this is the semi-analytical results. They become accurate for high SNR. This is the fully analytical results. And then here's a single source. Now for a single source, we have an improvement if you plot it versus the SNR for 8 sensors between least squares and structured least squares. And again, the analytical results agree. Which brings me to the conclusions. What we presented is a first-order perturbation analysis for structured least squares as pre, which is based on the performance analysis for the SVD, which is a very nice concept that can be used also in different fields. The nice thing about it, it's asymptotic in the effective SNR, so either small noise variance or large N. So it can be both, whatever you want. And it's explicit, which means you don't need any assumptions about the statistics. You need the noise to be zero mean, but you don't need the sources to be Gaussian. You don't need the noise to be Gaussian. You just need it to be small. And we've also shown mean square error, assuming zero mean circularly symmetric IID noise. And now I've also shown you the explicit expressions for a single source where you can actually see the asymptotic efficiency. This concludes my talk. Thanks for listening.
We have time for questions.
Yeah, please.
What's the difference between structured least squares and total least squares? They seem to be similar in theory. Right?
There is a relation, but there is also a difference. Okay, here. In total least squares, you allow for an error in this expression, in your mapping matrices, let's say, but you assume that there are independent errors on the left and the right-hand side of the expression. That's why this is called structured least squares. In total least squares, you would model two independent errors for the left and the right and say they're different, but actually there is a structure in the shifted variance equations which tells you that these are actually not independent, they're almost the same except for those selection matrices, and the structure should be incorporated in the solution. That's how it's structured least squares. Right. This only is,
I have a second question. You have this construction U plus delta U.
Mm-hmm.
And U, of course, is some sort of unitary matrix, right?
Yes.
Because it stands for the singular vectors. Which So when you write U plus delta U, it's again unitary, right?
It doesn't have to be. We don't confine the delta U explicitly to be unitary. It could be non-unitary.
So why?
No. For Esprit, you don't need the constraint that this is a unitary matrix. You can choose any subspace that you want. It doesn't have to be unitary.
No, but the subspace corresponds to a unitary matrix because the unitary matrix contains all the basis structure.
Well, you can describe a subspace using any basis. Any basis is equivalent. Typically, you use the SVD because it gives you an orthonormal basis and it's nice to work with and it's simple. But you could use any other basis and it would have no impact on the performance. Any basis is fine, it doesn't have to be unitary. Actually, when we started doing TensorSpree, the first version, how we defined our subspace, it was non-unitary, but then when we corrected it to be unitary, it had no impact on the performance, which is just what we expected.
Yeah, but just to, US is a semi-unitary matrix, where
yes,
if you have plus delta, it's obviously not semi-unitary matrix.
Yeah.
So can you investigate some kind of, let's say, perturbation that you would like to minimize, but which would still, you would still operate in a Stefan manifold,
right,
basically?
You could do it, but I wouldn't see what would be the benefit. I mean, we don't need the semi-unitarity for deriving Esprit or for using it, so but it would be possible, of course.
Jean-Jacques, do you have a question?
You look the asymptote as SNR goes to infinity. Did you also look at the number of snapshots goes to infinity already?
So what we actually need, let me go to the results of a single source here. What we need is that this term in front here, that it becomes zero. So you have PT, which is the power of your source. You have sigma n, which is the power of your the noise variance. And you have n, which is the number of snapshots. So if you have a finite SNR and you let n go into infinity, it works just exactly the same way, right? Either you let n go to infinity, or you get the noise variance go to zero, or the source power go to infinity. Either of those works.
By the way, on this slide, you say that S3 has the factor n over
Yes, for a single source, only for a single source. It's not as bad for multiple sources. It was surprising when I saw it for the first time, but I can verify it using simulations, so it should be right. It is surprising because even low-resolution techniques are asymptotically optimal for a single source, but Esprit is not.
I'm not a fan of Esprit, but I'm glad to see it. But you say it is a Lamont source.
When there are more sources, it's not as bad. It's very hard to find these expressions explicitly for more sources because the number of terms you get gets very large, becomes very tedious. We try to simplify it, but we actually didn't get the final result. But from simulations, my experience is that this is kind of the worst case in terms of comparing it to the Kramer bound.
But it also disappears, of course, if you replace least squares by structured least squares, which is right. The purpose of this paper.
And it's just one correction term. It's not an iterative procedure you have to apply, as we showed it. Already with a single iteration, it basically disappears, this drawback, right? And it's something simple. It's solving one set of equations, one additional one.
Gloria, just a question. It seems that structured least squares is better than least squares, especially when the sources are correlated, yeah, right? Mm-hmm. So can I translate it to... the subspace estimation is worst when the sources are correlated. Is there a one-to-one mapping between the two? Because this is the main difference between the two methods.
The problem is that there is not always a one-to-one mapping between a better subspace and a better performance of a spree. When we started with tensor spree, for a single source, we got a better subspace, but the mean square error of the spatial frequency was exactly the same. So sometimes you get a better subspace, but it does not help you in terms of your mean square error performance. I would say that there should probably be some link, but I don't know if it's a weak link or a strong link. So this is something we still have to investigate.
No more questions? So let's think again.